Today I'd like to talk about Cardassian expansion, which is a new model for an accelerating universe that is both matter-dominated and flat. And this represents work that I've done at the University of Michigan with Katie Fries. We've heard a lot in the past few days about the idea that our universe is accelerating, and there are really two major lines of evidence that suggest this. One, which I've shown here in this picture, are the measurements of high Z supernovae. And the second, which I don't have a picture for here, is the fact that the first peak in the power spectrum for the cosmic microwave background indicates that the universe is flat, while measurements of the cluster baryon fraction indicate that the amount of matter in the universe is 1/3 of the critical density. So this implies that 2/3 of the matter in the universe is missing. Well, at least that's the typical picture. The typical picture is that we need dark energy to cause the universe to accelerate. And this dark energy is typically either a cosmological constant, which is a vacuum energy density, or something like quintessence, where you have an equation of state for some sort of dark energy, which might vary in time. And there's a large experimental effort now to measure that parameter. What I'd like to talk about today is the other possibility that doesn't get a whole lot of press, which is the fact that the Einstein equations themselves might be modified. So the general outline of this talk is going to be as follows. I'm going to introduce a modification to the Friedman-Robertson-Walker equations, which will allow us to have an accelerating universe that has only matter in it. And then after I go through why that works so well, I'm going to talk about how this modification might be motivated in the context of some of the brain world scenarios that we've heard about earlier today. So we'll start at the very basics of standard cosmology. This is the Friedman-Robertson-Walker equation in the absence of any curvature. So this describes a flat universe. H is the Hubble parameter, which tells you how the universe is expanding. And the expansion rate is related to the total amount of energy density in the universe. Our modification is as follows. We're going to add a new term to the Friedman-Robertson-Walker case, which goes like B rho to the n. Okay? So this term here is what we call the Cardassian term. And we require, for reasons that I'll talk about later, that the exponent on the energy density there has to be less than or equal to 2/3 in order to get an accelerating universe. So Cardassian expansion, we can rewrite the Robertson-Walker equation like I have up there. And the idea here is this. The new term, the b rho to the n term, is initially negligible. So we have a universe which is expanding as it should, and nucleosynthesis is not affected. Early structure formation in the universe is also not affected. However, at a specific time that we can choose, at a specific redshift, which we call Zeq, these two terms become comparable, so that eventually the second term begins to dominate and the universe starts to accelerate. So what we have to do is choose this constant B such that at the appropriate time, so as to fit the supernova observations and the cosmic microwave background observations, these two terms are comparable and the universe starts to accelerate. Once the second term dominates, the universe accelerates according to T to the 2/3 n. So for various values of n, we can see that a value of n equals 2/3 corresponds to universe accelerating like t. This essentially mimics a curvature term, even though, as I've emphasized, the universe in this model is flat. For n equals 1/3, you have acceleration. And for n less than 1/3, we have an acceleration which is increasing. And this corresponds to a cosmic jerk, essentially. You have an acceleration that has a derivative itself. So this is essentially the model, the Cardassian model. Two important features that I'd like to talk about is that the model contains only matter. So the rho, even the rho in the second term, consists only of matter and possibly radiation. So that rho is going to scale with the scale factor of the universe as we expect. And secondly, as required by the cosmic microwave background observations, the universe is still flat. Okay. Because we've modified the Friedman equation, we have to reconsider what we mean by a critical density. If the universe is flat, it certainly can't have the same critical density that it had in conventional cosmology. So the first step in seeing if this is a viable model is to determine the critical density of the universe in the context of this new model. So what we can do is we can write down the Friedman-Robertson-Walker equation with the Cardassian term, evaluate it today, and because we're going to force our universe to be flat, the energy density rho naught there that satisfies this equation must in fact be the new critical density. So we can go ahead and solve for that, and I'm going to call it rho c bar, which is the critical density in the context of our model. Rho c, and we can write it in terms of old rho c, which I just call rho c, times some factor. Throughout the rest of this talk, I'm going to call that factor, this 1 over 1 plus all that stuff, f. Okay. So we find that we add this new Cardassian term. The critical density of the universe is modified. How is it modified? Well, it turns out for various values of n and for various z eeks there, or for one z eek, for z eek equals 1. Remember, that means that z eek equals 1 means that at a redshift of about 1, these two terms become comparable and the second term starts to take over. We can get energy densities which are 2/3, 1/3, or 1/6, I guess 0.3, 0.2, or 0.15 of the old critical density. Why is this useful? Why is this important? Well, it turns out this is very good news for the cluster baryon fraction, which I mentioned earlier. The cluster baryon fraction measurement suggests that omega matter is 1/3 of what it needs to be in order to have a flat universe. What the Cardassian model does with the addition of this new term is lower the critical density of the universe by possibly just the right amount to allow matter to provide the critical density for the whole universe. So this just reviews cluster baryon. Basically, the idea behind cluster baryon fraction estimates is you can measure the number of baryons in a cluster, you can measure the entire mass of that cluster, and numerical simulation suggests that that ratio on large enough scales is indicative of that ratio on the entire universe. Measurements, we know from Big Bang nucleosynthesis what omega baryon is. Putting all that information together, we can get an estimate for omega matter in the universe. And this is one of the pieces of evidence that suggests that we need more than just matter in the universe in the standard cosmological picture. Okay. One of the first things people say when they hear about Cardassian is, that's just quintessence. It's not quintessence. And there are a couple of important differences. Quintessence requires a dark energy component that has a specific equation of state. So you put a new fluid in the universe, a new energy field, and we don't do that in the Cardassian model. In the Cardassian model, we don't have to have a cosmological constant. We don't have to have quintessence. Just matter and radiation. That's it. Having said that, as far as observations that involve only the scale factor of the universe, A of t, are concerned, we can find a correspondence between the Cardassian parameters, which are essentially n, the power, and z eek, the time at which those two terms are comparable. We can find a correspondence between those parameters and Cardassian parameters. So essentially, n is related to w. As I've shown here, w is the equation of state parameter for quintessence. And the f, that f function, which is the ratio of our new energy density to the old energy density, the old critical energy density, is related to omega matter and to omega quintessence. This is useful for us because we can now use the existing constraints on quintessence parameters to constrain our Cardassian parameters. So then you say, thanks. Can the Cardassian and quintessence models be distinguished at all? It would be useful if there are some tests that could distinguish our new model from the conventional quintessence scenarios. I'll emphasize that the models are different, as I have before. Because the Cardassian model modifies the Einstein equations, we're modifying the Friedman equation, but that's going to require, ultimately, a modification of the Einstein equations. Certain fundamental features of conventional cosmology are also going to be changed, namely the Poisson equation, which is essential to understanding structure formation in the universe, is going to be modified in a way that we don't completely understand yet. So in addition, something like the late integrated Sachs-Wolfe effect might be different in the context of a Cardassian model, and these differences are currently being explored. So this is a plot of that function f of n and z eek, which I talked about before. the contour, which is labeled 0.3, represents values of n and ze, which are roughly consistent with present observations. That is to say, they are roughly consistent with the idea that the energy density in the Cardassian model should be 1/3 of the critical density in previous models. Current estimates of the dark energy equation of state parameter imply that it's probably less than about negative 0.7 and greater than negative 1. We've been hearing all week about the precision cosmological tests, which are going to refine these estimates, but we'll just take this for now. And so if we put those constraints on W, that implies that N is bigger than 0, less than about 0.29, and that in turn implies that Zeq has the following limits. Generically, if you have an accelerating universe, you're going to increase the age of the universe. An accelerating universe is typically going to be older than a universe that does not have acceleration, because at some point in the past, if it's accelerating at some point in the past, it was expanding more slowly than it is today. So current measurements suggest that the Hubble constant today times the age of the universe is about 0.93. And again, you can compute the age of the universe for the various Cardassian parameters, and 0.93 is consistent with a value of n around 0.2. Also, an accelerating universe is going to change the position of the first Doppler peak. The first Doppler peak is it's essentially the angular size subtended by the sound horizon at the time of recombination. Because the universe is accelerating in this model, or in a quintessence model, you're going to shift the position of that peak. And in fact, measuring the position of that peak is a way to constrain the dark energy equation of state. Consequently, you can also use it to constrain the Cardassian parameter n here. In particular, if n equals 0.2, you're going to find a shift of about 2% in the position of that peak relative to a pure cosmological constant. This 2% is certainly within the, I think, the error bars for the measurement of the position so far. Structure formation. Well, as I've already mentioned, because this Cardassian term does not become a factor until around a Z of 1, structure formation in the early universe is almost completely unaffected. It's only after the term kicks in that you have to worry about how it might affect structure formation. And in particular, you can show that the perturbations are going to die out. This is the same problem that quintessence has, essentially. So this is nothing to worry about. However, you might be able to constrain these models using Sloan or Deep 2 sky surveys in the future. All of these calculations were done with the assumption that we're just using the ordinary Poisson equation. Okay, as I mentioned, the Poisson equation is probably going to be modified because we're doing something drastic. We're changing Einstein's equations. Once we have a good motivating model for our system, we can compute what the Poisson equation has to be and then look at how that's going to affect structure formation. And we think that that's really going to be the way to distinguish a model like this, where you change the Einstein equations, from a model like quintessence. You can rewrite our Cardassian-Friedman equation in this way, in terms of a row cutoff, and in such a way that it's obvious that this Cardassian term does not become important until the energy density of the universe drops below this value, row cutoff. For reasonable parameters, row cutoff is about 2.7 times the critical density. So that means anywhere you have a large density, like this room, for example, or this solar system, or even in the galaxy, you're not going to see the effects of this Cardassian perturbation to the Friedman equation. So now how we've just sort of ad hoc thrown a term onto the Friedman equation, which seems kind of drastic. But in fact, in the context of brain world scenarios, this can actually be motivated. A Cardassian term might arise as a consequence of taking our universe and embedding it in a higher dimensional universe. We've heard all morning about brain world scenarios and how, generically, you get a modified Friedman equation. Well, it turns out you can get just about any Friedman equation you want. Thanks. Chung and Fries showed that, in general, by choosing appropriately the energy momentum tensor in the bulk, you can get a Friedman equation that goes like rho to the n for any n. If you want n equals 5, you can figure out what the energy density in the bulk has to be in order to give you that. So And this arises generally by considering the five-dimensional Einstein equations in the brain world scenario, together with the Israel boundary conditions, which are relating the energy on our brain to the derivative of the metrics in the bulk. Now, we stress that there is no unique five-dimensional energy momentum tensor which is going to give us the Cardassian term. However, you can construct an energy density in the bulk which will give you the Cardassian term, and this is what it looks like. And it's a complicated function of both time and the distance into the extra dimensions, which is here u. This is not pretty, and it's probably not what describes our universe. But we want to stress that this we understand that this is an inelegant example, okay? This is not the answer. We just wanted to do this as an existence proof. So, Cardassian fine-tuning. We don't solve the coincidence problem in here. We don't solve the cosmological constant problem. Because we want these two terms to be comparable at just the right time, we have to choose B very carefully. And that amounts to the coincidence problem. And it, in turn, implies that B has a mass scale on the order of 10 to the 58 GeV for reasonable parameters N and Z. But this, in turn, corresponds to an energy density in the bulk, which is on the order of 10 to the minus 5 GeV. Now, this is not a motivated number. We don't have any reason to believe that this should be, but there's no reason that it's not. So, and again, once we have a fundamental theory of what's going on in the bulk, we can then compute the cosmological consequences on our brain. So, to sum up, we have proposed a modification to the Friedman-Robertson-Walker equation that allow for a flat accelerating universe that contains only matter. There's no energy density. It lowers the critical density, so ordinary matter now results in a flat geometry. Things like the Doppler peak, nucleosynthesis, and structure formation are largely unaffected. And I think that from a theoretical perspective, it may be profitable to consider alternatives to the conventional dark matter scenarios. So future directions will include looking for a fundamental theory, which might be better motivated than that energy momentum tensor I wrote down. And we'd like to look at the structure formation in the context of these modified Poisson equations. And then, before I take questions, I'll answer the most frequently asked, which is, why did we call this the Cardassian? And the Cardassians are actually an alien race indigenous to Star Trek, as you may know. They appear foreign, but they're entirely matter. There's no dark energy there. And they're bent on the accelerated expansion of their empire. So, thank you very much.
We know that, man.
If you add an exponent equals zero, then you add the constant term and you simply put the lambda on the right side instead of the left side of the bigger equation and everything will be fine.
Right.
If it's not zero, and then people are not just modifying the homogeneous expansion, you're also modifying what happens to perturbation.
Right. Yeah, and that's currently.
If you take your classical theory, you want to write down the Lagrangian and derive.
We're in the process of doing that right now, and we think we can write down a covariant right-hand side to the Einstein equations, which give us the Cardassian scenario. We have not yet attempted to write down a Lagrangian that will then result in something that looks like Cardassian. Right. Yeah, I mean, we chose a specific form for the right-hand side of the Friedman equation. We said b rho to the n. Presumably, you can write that more generally as f of rho for some function f, and that might also result in pleasing phenomenology. This is just a first try.
Yes, actually, I think there's another way of getting the same theory in the end. You study with h squared from something rho, and then you try to add some terms. I think when you are doing this, higher derivative terms in the reaction. And then in this case, instead of getting h squared plus rho, you get h squared plus h cubed plus so on. And then you solve the respective range and you get.
There's some rho to a bunch of powers.
I think, for example, if you add some Galvanic term in the bulk, side, you know, that h squared plus h cubed, then when you simplify it, you get h equals h squared plus one plus corrections of the type that you want.
Right. Okay. That. Then.
I think, for example, the induced gravity case that I was discussing, it's exactly the same thing that, that goes on. And so I think the induced gravity in your prediction is similar to what you get.
Okay.
So the same time.
Yeah, and this first observation, I mean, you argue that z equality or z equals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we haven't addressed nonlinear structure formation. We've only worked in this linear approximation that I showed you. But that's something that we want to start working on now. Yes, there will be effects on nonlinear structure growth, but they will be the same essentially as that predicted by quintessence. Because in both the quintessence and Cardassian models, the scale factor is doing exactly the same thing. The Poisson equation is different, but we don't know what the Poisson equation is, so we can't even start to address those questions yet.
So
yeah, that would be an interesting thing to look at. I agree.
Probably not too much different because presumably gravity at high densities is
right. That's the, our other argument. When you drop below this, as long as you're above this rho cutoff, it's not going to make much of a difference, I think.
Yeah.